Now we'll call upon Brother David to come forward and give us his address based in Zechariah chapter 8, entitled Boys and Girls Playing in Jerusalem's Streets. Brother David.
Good morning, brothers and sisters, and good morning, Sunday School scholars. Well, as Brother Phil said at the start, this is largely a Sunday School address, but there's really very, very little, and I can't think of anything, where we address children and adults can't think, that doesn't apply to me. So, what applies to adults applies to children, even though children grow up to the knowledge of things, and basically wouldn't be able to understand perhaps some of the things that adults understand. But there's nothing that is applicable to a child that is not applicable to an adult. So, brethren and sisters can all take encouragement from this. And we've considered this weekend, that Zechariah encouraged the likes of Joshua, Zerubbabel, not to despise the day of small things. Well, I don't think it's particularly difficult, especially this weekend, to understand what is meant by the day of small things. How many Sunday School scholars are here today? There's you four, Dan and Peter and Timothy. So seven Sunday School scholars. That's not a particularly big event, is it? Seven Sunday School scholars at the study weekend. Admittedly high in that, has many more. But even then, as a Berean community, we're pretty small, aren't we? You know, people in work sometimes ask me, how many of you are there? And I say, you know, a couple of hundred. And you draft in the Kenyans and the Nigerians to try and bolster the numbers. We really are a very small community. So this is a day of small things. So, while we as brothers and sisters may feel that, there aren't many people at the gathering, Sunday School scholars, you may feel the same. You know, you haven't had any additional Sunday School scholars come and visit. So there is a time and a place for great encouragement, not just for brethren and sisters, but for Sunday School scholars as well. So this morning, I think if I might have been hard pressed to give an answer, but if I was asked, can you pick out a really wonderful picture of the kingdom age, I would have thought this verse that Brother Matthew Tippins just read to us would be one of them. The streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. There are few things that offer more pleasure than to see children playing together. It must be just one of those inbuilt things that when we see children playing nicely, laughing and you know, doing whatever they're playing with, however they're enacting out parts of life, whatever it is, it offers a great deal of pleasure to adults. So this is a beautiful picture for children, you know, to think that the streets of Jerusalem city shall be full of boys and girls playing. But in a sense, the greatest comfort really that this affords is to adults. Because children, I mean, I was forbidden to go certain places as a child. I was never allowed to go outside of York Street, which is where we lived. I know my mother knows this now, but I didn't very often stay in York Street. To me, the whole Godrianon was there to be explored, you know. I wasn't to go near streams. I got caught out on that one because I actually fell in the stream, cut my wrist, and I couldn't really hide that. So, from a child's point of view, there is no danger. There are no boundaries. You know, it's there for the taking. It's the adults that impose rules on us. Why do they impose rules on us? Why do they impose boundaries and limits? It's for our safety, isn't it? You know, so as a child, you can't see that. But as an adult, we can see that. And my parents, and especially my grandparents, tell us, you know, they go off for a day. You know, they may take a picnic with them, and they go up the mountains, whatever. We can't do that anymore. I wasn't allowed to do it. And it's even less likely that any sensible parent would allow their children to do it today. Why? Is the world a safe place? No, it's not, is it? So this picture that's presented to us there must be, to a parent, incredibly encouraging to think that whereas now, especially if you're living in a city, you know, there are lots of parents in cities who won't even allow their children out the front door if they're not with them. So this is really a wonderful picture. So what sort of things play on the minds of parents? You've got the health of a child. So is the child groaning in pain? If so, that's a cause of concern for a parent, isn't it? There's something wrong with the child. The safety of a child. So when a parent walks up to the roadside, they're holding their hands. Why? Because they're afraid the kid may dart out and a bus wipes them out. Okay, so health, safety. What's the other thing? One other thing that parents care about for children. If you've got children and they're growing up, okay, are they going to be a child, a dependent forever? I'm sorry? Influence. Well, that comes under this category, yes. That's more or less what I'm driving at. Education. You want your child to be educated. You know, come 16, 17, 18, you know, the child is going to have to start thinking about how they're going to fend for themselves. Well, if you haven't taught them a thing, they're not going to be able to fend for themselves. So education is another thing. So, this verse then implies that all the features of child raising will be accommodated in this city. So the health of children and their safety and well-being and their education. But the real dimension to this verse is in Psalm 122 verse 6, where it says, and we all know the verse very well, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love thee. So what, if I don't know how much you know about Jerusalem, but do you think Jerusalem is a prime place to let your children play? No. And I hate to say it, but I would have thought there are a fair few parts of London which are probably safer than Jerusalem. Why? Why would Jerusalem be a fairly unsafe place to let your children play? Oh yes, in the kingdom it will be safe. But before the now is Jerusalem a safe place?
Oh yeah,
I hate to disabuse you of the idea because do you know what Jerusalem means? There shall be peace, or city of peace.
Well, it's not peace now. It's not going to be God. Because God is going to look after us. He's looking after us now. I'm listening to us as we speak.
Yes, that's true. But in Jerusalem. In Jerusalem, it's a very unsafe place.
And the world is over here.
It is? Oh yeah, the whole world is unsafe. That's the point, isn't it? Nowhere is safe on earth. And even in the poor.
I thought the kingdom where all together we can be led unto God.
Well, that's what the point is, isn't it? You know, parents can sit down and the children can just come and say, Mummy, can I go to play? And they say, yes. And there's no sort of like, yes, but you mustn't go beyond the street boundaries, or you mustn't go outside of the garden, or you mustn't do this, because everywhere will be safe. So it is a beautiful picture. Well, you've probably never heard of a person called Yitzhak Rabin. He appeared at a conference with the Palestinian leader in America. And this is, I won't read it all. But he says, okay, this is referring to his, he was a Jew, he was a Jewish leader, he was a patriot fighter in the War of Independence. He said, we have come from Jerusalem, the ancient and eternal capital of the Jewish people. We have come from an anguished and grieving land. We have come from a people, a home, a family that has not known a single year, not a single month in which mothers have not wept for their sons. We have come to try and put an end to the hostilities so that our children, our children's children, will no longer experience the painful cost of war, violence and terror. We have come to secure their lives and to ease the sorrow and the painful memories of the past, to hope and pray for peace. And he goes on, we, the soldiers who have returned from battle stained with blood, we who have seen our relatives and friends killed before our eyes, we who have attended their funerals and cannot look into the eyes of their parents, we who have come from a land where parents bury their children. We who have fought against you, the Palestinians, we say to you in a loud and clear voice, enough of blood and tears, enough. And those words have always had a powerful effect on me. We who have come from a land where parents bury their children. The normal course of life is where we're born, we grow old, we start a family, we get older, then we get very old, and eventually we die. Who buries us? Our children. But here, you know, he's saying, we've come from a land where parents bury their children. Because of terrorism. I'm sorry?
That will happen in the kingdom because all those that are God faith in Christ in God, they'll be resurrected. John, Paul.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But what the Prime Minister of Israel was saying is that in this country, parents bury their children because they've been killed in coffee shops. They've been killed maybe when they're in war. Yeah, because Jerusalem has been a city where there's been anything but peace. So Jerusalem has never enjoyed true peace. Which leads us to the question then, what's going to happen then? We've got a city which is torn apart by bloodshed. And here we have a prediction that boys and girls will be seen playing in the streets of Jerusalem. What has to happen for us to get to that point? Promises have to be realized. What sort of promises? Turn to, let's have a look at Isaiah chapter 40 verse 2. Brother Matthew turned this one up for us yesterday. Isaiah chapter 40 verse 2. Why has Jerusalem not been able to find peace? Because what? They were godless. You know, Israel rejected their Messiah. And Christ predicted that Jerusalem would be trodden down of the Gentiles for a long period of time. And that's what has happened. They shouted at the crucifixion of Christ, his blood be on us and on our children. And that's what's happened. So the bloodshed we see in Jerusalem, while it's horrific and it's sad, that's what they called, they prophesied upon themselves, Christ's blood would be on them and on their children. And that's what has happened. So in Isaiah chapter 40, we read, comfort ye my people, saith your God. Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem and cry unto her, that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned. For she hath received of Yahweh's hand double for all her sins. So, we could go back to 2 Samuel chapter 7. 2 Samuel chapter 7 is where David receives the promises, where Christ would sit on his throne. Where was David's throne? Jerusalem. So we know, David knew that at some point, he probably didn't realize just how long it would be before it would be fulfilled.
And there's a song Jerusalem as well.
There is. A lovely song, isn't there?
Yeah.
But the words may be slightly amended, yes, maybe. But that is a glorious picture. David would have had that picture, Christ sitting on his throne, which is in Jerusalem. And that's fundamental. Do you know why? Because a lot of Christians believe in going to heaven when you die.
Oh, come on, that's stupid. You don't go to heaven when you die.
Absolutely.
You're born from the dust, I know you're born from your mother's stomach, but you were made from dust, but Eve was made from Adam.
Right.
It was like Adam decided to live about giving birth to Sarah. God,
I think
Abraham took a rib out of Adam, under the bone of Adam, putting him to the woman, and then she came into life.
Well, that's also a fundamental thing to understand, but I think we're digressing a little bit in the sense that David was looking for Christ to sit on his throne. So it meant that David didn't believe we were going to heaven. He believed that his hope was when Christ sat on his throne in Jerusalem. So, and we have in Isaiah 40 saying that Zion's warfare would be past. And then just quickly, Isaiah chapter 52 and verse 1 and 2. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garment, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. Shake thyself from the dust, arise and sit down, O Jerusalem. Loose thyself from the bands of thy neck, O captive daughter of Zion. So, this idea of children playing in the streets of Jerusalem, I mean, what a wonderful picture for children to think, okay, you can go out and play. But really, this is a really encouraging picture for adults, because the thought that they can relax when their children go out to play They don't have to sort of put CCTV up in the back garden just to make sure that they're okay. It's a glorious prospect for adults, but it's a glorious prospect for adults because when Jerusalem is safe for children to play in, that is when Christ is reigning. And that is what all faithful believers are looking for. Yes, the idea of children playing safely is a beautiful picture. But it's the beauty of the picture that brings us to the focus of the whole issue, that Christ is in the earth. Christ is King. He's omnipotent. There will be no more Jew haters. There will not be war throughout the earth. There will be no more godlessness. There will not be no more Catholicism, atheism, or any other issue. Christ is in the earth. So Jerusalem will be saved. They will have one righteous ruler, and all subjects will be of the same religion. And Zephaniah chapter 3 tells us, "Then will I turn to the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of Yahweh to serve him with one consent." This is why there is no peace in Jerusalem. It's because you have different religions. Different nationalities too. But you've got the Jews who want to practice their religion, if they have any religion at all, and you have the Muslims. Believe it or not, you don't realize this, and I was bowled over when I went to Israel. You also have a lot of Catholics. So you've got Jews, Muslims, and Catholics. And a certain amount of Armenians, Protestants, and various Russian Orthodox and everything, all wanting to be in the land. It's why there is no peace. It's the way God intended it, and it's the way that they prophesied it would be with them. But Zephaniah tells us there will be one pure language. Also, children, boys and girls playing in the streets of Jerusalem may denote something a little more than just perhaps playing in the dirt. It may denote something else. Come with me to 1 Chronicles chapter 15 and verse 28. And in that chapter we find the transporting of the ark to Jerusalem. So 1 Chronicles chapter 15. And verse 28. "Thus all Israel brought up the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh with shouting, and with sound of the cornet, and with trumpets, and with cymbals, making a noise with psalteries and harps." This was the joy that David felt, and which he wished the whole nation to feel, upon the Ark of God being taken to Jerusalem, where God had chosen to put it. And in verse 29, "It came to pass as the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh came into the house of David, that Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked out of the window and saw King David dancing and playing. And she despised him in her heart." That's the same playing as we read boys and girls playing in the streets. So perhaps boys and girls playing may denote more than just playing as children play, but maybe playing on instruments, playing hymns, and singing psalms and things like that. Again, what a beautiful picture. Have you ever heard Arab music? It's awful. It's disturbing almost, you know. None of the worldly music that we have today. Jerusalem won't be scourged with Muslim call to prayer every morning. We'll have beautiful melodic psalms being sung as people come and worship. And I'm quite confident, that children will play a very prominent part in singing those hymns. So maybe children playing safely in the streets, that is definitely one way of looking at it. But I think perhaps you may also have the aspect drawn that the children will be prominent in playing music and singing hymns. Now, this really is digressing from the subject. But who will these children be? Now this is strange. I'm addressing a Sunday school here, and at the same time I'm going to say it's not going to be any of you. Why? Absolutely. How long does it take to establish the kingdom? And I'm not looking for an absolutely bang on accurate answer.
We don't know, actually, because we don't know. It could be almost
here. Yes.
School,
Yes, but if Christ were to return, if Christ were to return today, I don't know if you realise, but the kingdom as a whole won't be established for at least another 40 years, and we believe probably more like 50 years.
So, what's the point of him telling us?
No. No. Christ could return today. But even if he does return today, can anyone tell me anything about Nebuchadnezzar's image? So you have an image. What was the head made of?
Gold.
Gold.
Silver and bronze.
And then, yeah, bronze. And then the legs and the thighs.
The silver.
Sorry, the legs, sorry. No, they were iron. And
well, that's an iron flying soldier.
Well, that's where we get the word iron from, is because it's heavy and made of iron, so that it's heavy enough to iron the pieces of it, of course. And then the feet made of iron and clay. What happens to the image?
Smarter.
By what?
Hammer, God's power.
Stone. A stone is cut out of the mountains without hands. Like you said, God's power, it smashes the image. And when the image is smashed, is the kingdom already established?
Yeah.
No. It actually says that it grinds the image to powder and it gradually fills the whole earth as a mountain. Well, that indicates to us that there's a process. So there'll be a time from the time Christ returns to the time when the kingdom is established throughout the whole earth. At the same time, we probably are safe to say that Jerusalem will be saved quite soon on. Who is the power that descends upon Israel and which Christ will break? Russia, yeah. Did you say Gog then?
Yes, God.
Oh, no. God destroys Gog. He destroys Russia. And after that, there will be no more enemies. From that point on, even though the world is still wicked, the papacy is still there fighting against Christ, there'll be people sort of still doing their wicked things, Russia will be destroyed, Israel will become safe, and Christ will rule in kingdom. And that's the smiting of the image on its feet, and that's the beginning of the grinding process. So while the world still lies in wickedness, Jerusalem will be made safe and habitable. And so maybe 10 years from now, if Christ were to return today, maybe 10 years from now, Jerusalem would be completely safe. Maybe less, I don't know. But anyway, going back to... So these children may be children from all over the world. They may be children born to the mortal inhabitants of that age. They won't be raised as Muslims. They won't be taught from the time that they're this high that Jews are infidels, the Jews are the people of Satan. None of that. All that would be history. Catholics, atheists, they'd all be history. Do we want to take a part in this scene?
Oh yeah, the scene trying to come apart, because the more people the more desire, and they smoked a lot across the sea. God opened it up, and then God, when the Pharaoh came, I was Pharaoh.
But do you know what? Do you know who Moses is a type of?
Who?
The Lord Jesus Christ, who himself will smite the Sea of Nations, and Israel will be able to pass through. Because Israel are all over the world. If you go to New York, you've got a pretty good chance of seeing some Jews in New York. But Jesus will smite all the nations of the world, and the Jews will pass through the nations and return to the land, just like they did under Moses. So Moses is a type of Christ in that regard. Well, I mean, there aren't many places more beautiful, not the building itself, but the area we're in now. It's very beautiful, but it's not safe. You walk to the beach and ask people, what do you think about the march of the rainbowed angel? They're going to look at you like you've got two heads, because they couldn't care less what happens in the Bible. They couldn't care less what God says. So as beautiful as this world is, and it has been made beautiful, we're not denying that, nowhere is safe, nowhere is godly. Even when you go to God's own people in Jerusalem and the capital city Tel Aviv, or what used to be the capital city Tel Aviv, it's godless. But in this age, it'll be completely different. And if we turn quickly to Isaiah chapter 2, Isaiah chapter 2 again presents a mixed message, but it's a wonderful scene that in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of, verse 2 of Isaiah 2, of Yahweh's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow into it. And many people shall go and say, come here, let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. You ask anyone who's sort of spoken to people in the world, and it's very demoralizing when I'd rather have an argument with someone who doesn't agree with me. I'd rather argue than someone just shut their ears and say, look, I'm not interested. Really, it's really discouraging when people are not interested. What a difference this world will be then. The people actually say, come and let's go up to the house of God. What a difference. That is not the world we know today. And this is not the city that we know today. I mean, if you think of a picture of Jerusalem, what do you think of? What's the prominent feature in any picture of Jerusalem? There's probably two prominent features, but one is the wall. It is big, great, sort of yellowy, brown sort of wall. What's the other big prominent feature of Jerusalem? Big Dome of the Rock. Muslim. That will be gone. And in actual fact, Jerusalem will be so different then, it's not even going to be there where it is now. Do you know why? It's going to be some way to the south. So Jerusalem is actually going to move southwards. Do you know why? Well, we won't turn there because I've used up enough time as it is. But if you look at Ezekiel chapter 42, you'll find that the temple then, okay, so the temple in Jerusalem in Solomon's day, okay, the holy place is probably not much bigger than this room, a bit squished and a bit longer. Actually, no, it probably wouldn't be as big as this room. How big will the temple be in that day? A mile by mile. Do you know what? That uses up pretty much all the city of Jerusalem as we have it today. So that, the city of Jerusalem, okay, that we know of today, where the Dome of the Rock is, flattened, levelled, and raised, and the temple will be built there, which means that the city will be some way to the south. So it is lovely to go to Jerusalem, admittedly, and think, oh, this is the city of David, but unfortunately it's not going to even be there. That is going to be the place of the temple, and the streets of the city will be further south. So I'll close with just this Psalm 24, and if we want to be in this place, then what do we have to do? And of course the obvious thing is to obey. That's the long and short of it. But Psalm 24 says in verse 3, who shall ascend into the hill of Yahweh, or who shall stand in his holy place? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity nor sworn deceitfully, he shall receive the blessing from Yahweh and righteousness from the Elohim of his salvation. This is the generation of them that seek him, that seek thy face, O Jacob, Selah. So we have to be amongst this class of people then who are of clean hands. What does clean hands represent? What does that tell us, I mean, sorry? It's not just people who have, you know, washed their hands and made sure there's antibacterial all over it so there's no germs, is it? That's not what it means. What are your hands for? In the scriptures, we have generally pictures presented to us of, okay, let me ask this again then, and maybe it will lead you back to the answer. What was left of Jezebel? Yes. So what does that tell us? Why is that dead? I mean, it's kind of immaterial what part was left of her. She was dead, gone, and eaten. But the Bible deliberately tells us that part of her skull, her hands, and her feet were there. Why? That's exactly right. She was such a grotesque person. She had evil thoughts. She did awful things with her hands, and her feet took her in the ways of wickedness. So, if we want to be part of this age, we have to have clean hands. So our hands have to be engaged in doing good things, not evil things. And who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity nor sworn deceitfully. What's vanity? I'm sorry?
Being vain.
Being vain. But you know what that really means? It's empty. Shallow. Vanity of vanity, saith the preacher. All is vanity. That's how the book of Ecclesiastes starts. So emptiness. So basically someone who has given themselves to the future, to the kingdom, to things of the kingdom. Not people who have spent their time developing, you know, great careers or building big houses or getting nice cars or looking nice or going to see lots of different places. That's all vanity. For someone who hasn't lifted up his soul to those kind of vain things, nor sworn deceitfully, you know, the kind of person who is circumspect in all his ways, these are the kind of people who will be in that great day. Thank you for your time.